Accession number 18580, Reel 3.
Andy Allen, Reel 3. You were just telling me how you came to be in Tobruk in 42.
Well, we landed at Port Said, and we got put up the desert, up to a holding camp, Tel El Kebir, T-E-L-E-L-K-A-B-I-R, Tel El Kebir. And we were formed into signal sections for going up the Blue. Well, by the Blue, I mean the desert, going up the desert. We were formed into a 27th Searchlight Regiment Signals, RA. We spent the first night there at the 2 kilo camp beside the pyramids. That was where the tanks were. I forget now. Seventh Armoured. I can't forget. I can't remember now. But we were spent the first night there. Picked up Leyland retrievers with the searchlight on the back, and picked up all the gear, then went up the desert. We didn't know where we were going, but we finished up in Tobruk, on the outer perimeter, top perimeter of Tobruk, for the night bombing. So when we went up there, the Stukas were there for the day bombing. They were in the, Eladem, Eladem, E-L-A-D-E-M, Eladem airstrip. And from where we were, we could actually see them come down, tank up, bomb up, up again, and back into the brook to give the boys a hard time. It didn't bother us much, because we were part of the scenery for them, as they were part of the scenery for us. They used to do the bombing, and then at night, there was a lot of shelling going on, German 88mm guns. They shelled us, and shelled all the people around the boat, all the lads around the boat. And then we fell back. We were falling back into the brook. Then Rommel made his push and he bypassed the brook. He went right down, going towards Alexander. He bypassed Tobruk, and the Camerons were there, the Black Watch were the infantry, and there was two or three English regiments, and Aussies, quite a lot of Aussies there. So they left us in a limbo for, 10 days? Week, 10 days, and then they came back to finish off a job. So they put up a heavy bombardment from the north side of Tobruk over the top, because I don't know whether they got a better go to the town from there, or no, I don't know why they did, but they were on the north side of Tobruk, and put up a heavy, very, very heavy bombardment. We were 2 days and two nights of that. And then we was ordered to destroy all our equipment. So we set fire to our vehicles, smashed our rifles, and then went down on the beaches. So I was, some of the naval boys there, using torches, and they were flashing offshore. saying there's so many men on this beach and so many men on this beach, and we're being recognised, we thought. But with German boats offside, and they were applying to this lad with a torch. So we didn't have a ghost of a chance. We knew we were going in the cage then. So next day, I was a big German come up. We had a loud hailer, and he told us we were better packing up because the rest of the South Africans had finished fighting. They packed their packs first, and they would finish fighting, and we'd be better packing up, or else we'd get another night's or two's bombardment. So we were lying there on the top of the sand, and a lad down the line says to me, he says, "Andy, I hear the pipes." I says, "Oh no." I says, "This is not the black hole of Calcutta, man." I said, "Didn't I hear pipes here?" But it was the pipes. The Germans had allowed the Scottish regiments to march in without arms or anything like that, as they were. And this was the pipers piping them in. And I never thought I'd hear that again. I never thought I'd hear things like that again there. It was amazing. Amazing. And then we were taken from there up the coast to Barry and on to
Brindisi?
No, Brindisi is on the Italian mainland. No, it was the big town where the Italians...
Benghazi.
We're taking up the coast of Benghazi. So, quite a lot of lads are suffering with bad stomachs, malaria, and things like that. And there were six nuns there. They couldn't say enough for that nuns. They commented, they administered to the very, very poorly. And then, when you are like that, you have no control over your stomach, nothing like that. And you just used to run up the sand, grab a shovel, and the boys back there were betting on matches whether you'd manage to make it before you made a mess. And when you made a mess and then you no shorts on, your shorts, you carried your shorts, you just went, you had your shirt there. And these nuns used to come round, see the mess in the tails of the shirts, and they used to get scissors and cut off the mess. That's true, I'm telling you. If there's a heaven to go to, that nurse should be, the nun should be in heaven. They should be in heaven.
Were you in that state yourself?
Yeah. I came down to 6/12.
Why did you catch diarrhea?
Oh, it was there. I had sandfly, had dysentery, and malaria all in one go. You couldn't help but pick it up. You're all mixing together. And then, whilst in Benghazi, we had the Wellington bombers come over. And they had a go at us then. Because I couldn't help it, we're up in the sands. Men. And at that time, they were wanting us to unload ships at Benghazi Harbour. And we said no. We just gave them a rank, name, rank, and number, and we did nothing else. We wouldn't do nothing else. Well, I wouldn't have been fit to unload anything anyway. So they got a hold of the Gurkhas, and there was a big tent there, great big marquee. And the Gurkhas were in there, so the Germans came up, and they were sorting out about six at a time. And they're taking them out of the marquee and round the back and holding them there. But when they held them there, the man that was holding them there used to go into the marquee again to sort them out from his end. And when he went into the marquee, so did the Gurkhas. So when he came out to say it again, there was no Gurkhas left. And that's happened quite two or three times until they put armed guards outside. But the Gurkhas when they unload. The Gurkhas when they unload the ships. No way.
So but what did the Germans do when they refused?
They got Italians.
What did the Italians do?
Unload the ships. But they had a hatred. The Germans had a hatred of a black man. They hated black men. I don't know if they do now, but I'm only speaking from my experiences. And they hated black men.
Did they hate the Gurkhas?
Oh, they knew that the Gurkhas were their abject enemies. They knew that the Gurkha had no time for them.
So didn't the Germans try to force the Gurkhas to do the work?
Try to, but then you see the Gurkhas give them a name, rank and number. And you see there was so many men of us there. If there had only been the Gurkhas there, they'd lined them up against the wall and shot them. But there's so many witnesses there that they daren't do it.
Did they try beating the Gurkhas?
No.
Why not?
They tried to... Oh, the Gurkha could have taken a beating and said, carry on. Oh, the Gurkha was a friend.
So the Germans were trying to get them to do navvying work?
Unloading war supplies. Unloading bombs and shells and ammunition. They tried us for a start, but I wasn't in a fit state. I couldn't have unloaded anything.
What happened to you next?
Went aboard, there was two new Italian ships taken in the harbour. They split us in two halves, and half went on one ship and half went on the other. And we went across the Brindisi. And that's where I told you I heard this. And I asked the naval boys what it was.
Did you go into an Italian POW camp?
Yes.
A Brindisi?
Brindisi. A holding camp there. Then we went on to PG Concentramento 49 at Fara Sabina.
PG 49?
PG 49.
Where was it?
Fara Sabina, outside Rome.
What were conditions like there?
Good. It was a new camp.
How did the Italians treat you?
Well, they treated us as well as they could, considering they were in the same state as everybody else. We didn't have the same rights as them. But we went out working in a working party, breaking up the gravestones in Roman cemeteries for them to make roads. But if you did that, you got fed. You got a midday meal, and you got 40 grams of bread extra.
If you went on a work party?
You went on a work party.
So how did you come to be transferred from Italy to Germany?
When Italy capitulated, we were the bosses then. There was no messing about. We were the bosses. There was no Italian army. There was nothing.
Was this still at PG 49?
That's where we moved out from. That's where we moved out from. And that's where I told you about the water. I was down the water with seven bottles going to fill them. And I was lying flat, filling the bottles. And somebody said in English, from the other side, "Where's your comrades?" "Where's your comrades, Tommy?" I says, looked up, and I saw a Luger poking almost through my face. And I says, "I've got no comrades." He says, "You must be a thirsty man. You must drink a lot of water." So Tom Chisholm come over the hill. He see me talking to what he thought was a civilian. And he shouted, "Ask if he's got any white bread, Andy." Eh? So he says, "Oh," he says, "another one." He says, "Come on then, we'll round you up." So that was the paratroops who came in for Mussolini. So going back with them.
To rescue Mussolini.
To rescue Mussolini, yes. And I'm sorry for what happened that then, because they brutalized and wrecked, the Germans did, brutalized and wrecked all the pictures and everything that they could lay their hands on, and they hid us wrapping them, rolling them in tissue paper to send back to Germany.
Where were they doing this?
In churches and everywhere.
Near PG-49?
No. We'd moved up then. We'd been taken by the Germans up the line with them.
You said that this man who recaptured you had said he'd been to Oxford?
Yes, he was an Oxford graduate. He spoke perfect. He spoke better English than I did. I was speaking Scottish to him and he was speaking English to me.
But did he tell you that at the time?
Yeah, he told me. He says, "Oh, we got very friendly with him. Because we were with this German unit. And the only difference when we went in the showers, they had the same uniforms as us. The only difference in the showers was we had grey socks and they had brown socks. But when you seen us all naked in the showers, you couldn't have picked an Englishman from a German. You couldn't. We're all the same." And they treated us very well.
But he knew that you were with comrades because you had lots of water bottles.
Lots of water bottles. My turn to go down and fill the water bottles.
But why did they treat you so well?
I don't know. But as that man said, he said, "The war for you is over, Alan." When he knew my name, Alan, he didn't call me Andy or nothing. He just said, "Alan, the war for you is over, Alan." He said, "But I have still to fight the war." So you could see that even in the darkest of nights, there was a light there. There was a light there, somehow.
In what way did they treat you so well?
Well, the fed us. The Germans who we were with then came in as a group to salvage stuff out of Italy, paintings, anything like that. And we were seconded to them to do the donkey work. We were the labourers. Now, when we went in the showers, there was no difference, as I said, but the men respected us for being soldiers, the same way as we respected them for being soldiers. Because after all, they thought they were doing right, and we thought we were doing right.
But were you carting works of art about?
No, we put it on a horse and cart. We were rolling, we cut the works of art they stipulated from the frames, and we wrapped them in tissue paper, and we put them onto this horse and cart.
These were paintings?
Paintings. Jugs. Anything that they thought. They come round with us, and they said that. And we were the labourers to do their work.
What kind of buildings were they taking it from?
Oh, churches, big buildings. Big homes.
Did any of the Italians complain about it?
No, because there were no Italians, and they would never allow Italians with us. We were their workhorses. And that's just part of the thing that we used to laugh at. We did, because we used to say, prisoners of war from Britain stealing Italian heirlooms and packing them up and sending them to Germany.
Whereabouts was this? What town?
Well, when we were first released, it was at Rome, near enough Rome. It was Monte Nerla, Nerla, N-E-R-O-L-A. So we moved from there, and we said, right, we'll keep going north, and we'll jump over the lines to try and get clear. But as I said before, that German officer caught me with the bottles, the water bottles, and we were all captured again. And then we were seconded to this group who were in raping Italy. They were raping Italy. Now, there, they kept us there, and then one day they came in, and the officer apologized for handing us over to Italians. He said, I'm sorry, we have to hand you over to Italians now, and they will make you a prisoner of war. So I went to a prisoner of war camp, an Italian prisoner of war camp, PG Concentramento 49. That was outside Rome, the top side of Rome. And then, sometime after that, Italy capitulated. But while in the prisoner of war camp, they asked for volunteers to go out and work. We weren't too keen until we found out what the work was. We had to go into Roman graveyards and smash up the headstones for making roads. So we said, right, though, we'll smash Roman headstones. And we used to get 40 grams of bread extra a day for doing this. We got a midday meal, which is a good meal, because we're own cooks. We supplied the stuff and they made it. And 40 grams of bread a day, which we distributed, well, sliced up for our friends in camp when we come back to camp at night. And that's how we lived at that period of time. But during that period of time, a friend, I've got his photograph of his headstone here, a friend from Aberdeen, Jim Adams, he died. And that's put a real blanket over the camp. Over the Scotsman, anyway, over the Scots, over the Yorks. We were depressed because we'd lost a man. And I can tell you what he died with. He died with nephritis. That was pleurisy of the kidneys. But we had so much money in the camp, with so much silver money, and we put everything together, and we bought a headstone. And I've got a photograph of the headstone with his number. Do you want his number?
No, that's all right.
But after the Italy capitulated, we were loose again. And then we were rounded up with the Germans. We were put on a train. And we went up to Verona. It was a gigantic marshalling yard at Verona. And we were in Verona one night. 1,000 bomber raid come over, so they said, anyway. And some idiots in our train said, we'll set fire to the straw. We'll give them someone to mark the target. So the Germans went berserk. They threatened us, heavy machine guns up. They were going to shoot the lot through the carriages and everything. So we had to put the fires out. From Verona, we went non-stop, and I repeat, non-stop to Auschwitz. We arrived at Auschwitz, we went into a new lager, That's 1,100 men. We done a new lager, and we settled down there. Then they started sorting us out. And they come around and asked what we did in civilian life. And you never heard so much wise man. I was a deep sea diver's assistant, and Tom Chisholm was a deep sea diver. Chalky White was a lion trainer. And so it went on down the line. When we got that sheet into Philip, deep sea diver assistant, lion trainer, everything, it's stupid. So they said to themselves, well, I was 14 of us put in that, what they call the Strafarbeit. That was heavy punishment gang. Shifting big cases and everything got. Dead of winter, coming on. Then they put us on emptying coke out of the, after they finished the taking what they wanted out of the coal, it had the rough clinker. So they put us on shifting clinker. And we were sitting in wagons, throwing one piece of clinker out at a time. And this man came down, this German came down, and he went hairless. And then he says, well, put us on piecework. So he says, yeah, piecework. Dienstarbeit, they call that, piecework. So he says, how many wagons can you empty in a day? This man in charge of the group, he says, 14 men, 14 wagons. Wagon each. No. They wanted 32 wagons emptied a day. But we only had to drop the stuff on the ground, round about the rails, and the Jew boys came in about the barras and took it away for making roads. Because at Aigie Farben then, the place was just a mud bath, some places, part of it.
So these were stone chippings, were they?
No. You know when you draw a furnace? Clinker. And we had a big argument with this man. So we ended up for 16 trucks to empty. So we says, well, when we empty them trucks, do we get back to the camp? Oh, yes. Empty 16 trucks and you can shout for the guard, the posting, and you go back to camp. So, come down this day, 6 o'clock in the morning, head count 4:30, count 5 o'clock, march down the factory at 6 o'clock. So we was in at 6 o'clock, and this man in charge of our commando, he says, right boys, drop the side doors, drop the back, the doors at each end, and go. So at 7:30, we had all the 4 to 16 carriages emptied. And we went and looked for a guard. And we went down to the hut and we shouted to the guard, come on, we're going up. So when he came back, we were all lined up, ready to go up, walk up the road. And he says, we can't go up the road yet. We says, look, listen, that German Baumeister said when we finished here, emptied that on the ground, we had to go home. We could go home. So they took us up to the camp, and for the next 2 or 3 days, you never had such a row with the Germans and us. They said 32 was set by this Baumeister, and it should be 32. We said, no. So we got taken off that. The Jew boys were put on.